all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
It's me. Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Wednesday, March 29th. Coming up this hour, your 2 cents on a $7 billion surplus, because once next week's election is behind us, Wisconsin legislators will get back to work on drawing up a two-year budget that determines the level of state support for all kinds of services that affect daily life in the state. So we will talk to Eau Claire Democratic Assembly Rep Jody Emerson to help us outline the ways that you can provide your ideas, especially how to handle that multi-billion dollar surplus that Republicans have been sitting on for more than a year. And earlier, because Dr. Kristen Lyerly joined us and is, continues to be with us in this hour, we talked about Dan Kaufman's new article in The New Yorker about Wisconsin and setting up the stakes for the state Supreme Court race. And we began by talking about Sheboygan being cut in half through rigging the maps, through gerrymandering. Jody has the opposite situation, where Eau Claire used to be split into two districts. I had represented the north end of it in the state Senate. But what they did was the exact opposite. They put all of Eau Claire as its own island. And so Jody is pretty safe as a Democratic Assembly rep, but it also means that there are no Democratic legislators anywhere around Eau Claire as a result. And frankly, as a result of other gerrymandering, Jody is, I think she's one of the northernmost legislators in terms of, you know, her and Christina Shelton over in your neck of the woods.
Right. Well, in the 8th Congressional District, I can tell you the entire district is red. It's a giant district. And the only little tiny islands are the middle of Green Bay and the middle of Appleton. And the whole rest of the district is red. And that's not who we are.
That's not. It's not. No. The polling doesn't indicate that by any stretch of the imagination. But it's red because they have rigged the maps to be that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so unrepresentative.
No. So Kristen's here. We talked earlier about the letter that she and 300 other physicians signed taking a stand for Judge Janet Protasiewicz in next week's Supreme Court race. And you're also going to be back here tomorrow, as usual, at 7:30 for your hometown health segment. What's coming up there?
We are going to talk with Dr. Christopher Ford, who is an emergency medicine doc out of Milwaukee. And we're just going to go through some of the people who signed on to that letter and talk about why they did and highlight some of the areas across the state where physicians are stepping up to use their voices. So I think it's going to be a really neat conversation. And double bonus, Dr. Ford was also the chair of the Fair Maps Committee that the governor put together. So he is well-versed in how medicine and politics are intersecting these days and how we must do better.
More people are getting involved in politics in some way, shape, or form than ever thought they would before. Mm-hmm. I mean, you and I have similar stories of that we were both just kind of doing our jobs, but then saw how circumstances were changing and realizing we need to step up. We need to get involved. You did the same thing in running for assembly a couple of years back. And it's because of circumstances that I'd like to say are getting better, but they are not, which takes us to the state of Idaho, which is about to become the first state to try to make it a felony to bring minors across state lines to get abortion care without parental consent, even in states where it's legal, where abortion rights are still legal. The notion of it's not quite roadblocks at the state line, Kristen, but we're getting that much closer to it.
It's about transporting within Idaho, actually, and it was written in a very clever way so that states like Minnesota, who are putting other laws on the books to protect people who travel to these sanctuary states, cannot protect people within states like Idaho. This is terrible, and it's just another piece of the puzzle for those white Christian nationalists who are controlling the state right now to completely restrict any access to abortion whatsoever. And people are suffering and dying because of this.
Oh yeah. And again, yeah, like you said, looking at one of the news articles here, the legislation doesn't actually say anything about crossing state lines, but Republican lawmakers are creative. Most pregnant people in Idaho are not traveling to obtain an abortion elsewhere in the state, since abortions there are illegal. They're traveling to the border with the intent of crossing state lines. And so that's how they're criminalizing people before they would get to, you know, the state line itself. And again, to spend your time with that when children are being gunned down in the hallways of their schools is again, just a level of cartoon villainy I can barely conceive sometimes.
Well, and this is something, this law would even, it would make it a felony for your aunt to drive you to the post office to pick up the package that contained the abortion medication. Your aunt could be charged with a felony for that. I mean, this is
some small really government, man. That's stuff. The government needs to get out of our lives is what I heard all the time, but apparently not when they feel like it.
Well, and you know, Pat, I have a dear friend who is an OBGYN doctor there who was recently actually interviewed on This American Life about her situation. She moved her entire family to Sand Point. They love it there. They love the people. They love the community. But she's leaving. And when she leaves, she's the one OBGYN who has been in leadership there, who has tried to be progressive and make sure that people are safe. She's the one who heads up the maternal mortality review committee to study maternal deaths, which is a really important piece of taking care of people. They're losing their bearings in Idaho. Yeah. And people, like I said, are suffering and dying.
They are. That's just it. It's all kinds of other people who suffer for the political points of a few. We will take a break. We will get a weatherology update from meteorologist Jennifer Vachitsky, and then more ahead of Representative Jody Emerson joining us at the bottom of the hour on Up North News Radio. It's a Wednesday morning here, and if you want to call and share your thoughts with us, you can reach us at 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155. We'll be back. This, of course, is Blood, Sweat, and Tears. You've Made Me So Very Happy. And apparently that's what Dr. Lyerly does based on the comments on Facebook, where Representative Christina Shelton is saying good morning to you. And thank
good
you
morning.
For the shout out out there. So we appreciate that very much. Speaking of friends, meteorologist Jennifer Vachitsky is with us from Weatherology. And we're going to get a forecast update for the rest of this week as we stand at midweek at the somewhere at the intersection of winter and spring. We're on that vernal, is it vernal? Autumnal, vernal. We're on the vernal roller coaster. Jen, good morning. What's new?
Good morning. Yeah, and that's a great way to put it. It's definitely that roller coaster ride here for the next several days, particularly once we get to the end of the work week into the weekend ahead. But it's a really interesting next couple of days coming up. So today we saw that cold front that moved through the state. So for today, a few spotty areas of snow early this morning in the southern parts of the state, becoming mostly sunny for the day. Temperatures, for the most part, actually holding pretty steady around in the 30s here where we're currently at this morning, becoming sunny and lingering around the upper 20s, around 30 in the central and western parts of the state, Wausau over to Amory. Afternoon rain chance from Oshkosh to Richland Center over to Milwaukee on Thursday, and warmer as well as a warm front begins to move through the state tomorrow. Rain and snow chances becoming rain tomorrow around Baldwin. Friday, we start to get a little bit more interesting. Chance for rain for nearly the entire state unless you're farther toward the north, towards Iron River and Eagle River if you're traveling. So something to keep in mind, warmer weather, though, overall here as well tomorrow in the 60s towards the south, which is above average, 50s more centralized, and in the 40s more towards the west. The southern portions of the state, Richland Center, Madison, Waukesha, over to the lakefront, there's a marginal to a slight risk for severe weather here for your Friday. So definitely something we'll keep you updated on as we get closer to that. While around Amory and Baldwin, those areas are also expecting rain during the day, but then chances for snow late Friday night, mainly late night into the overnight hours, and anywhere between 4 to 6 inches of snowfall possible to accumulate. So like I mentioned, kind of a little bit of everything here for the next few days, and expecting to see that going into the end of the work week. And then once we get to the weekend, we'll get a little bit more of that forecast as we get closer to that, but a little bit of a chance for mixed precipitation for the state, some areas of sunshine, then cloud cover, and temperatures cooling down on Saturday for most, and warming back up on Sunday. So definitely that roller coaster ride of temperatures here for the next several days.
There may have been some complaints at the Kreitlow household from people who will go unnamed that our closets are burgeoning because you can't put the winter clothes away yet, but it's time to bring some spring clothes in. You basically have to be ready for anything, right? Don't you?
It's a very confusing time. Absolutely.
Layers. It's all about the layers. Jennifer, thank you very much. Exactly. Have a great day.
You too.
Weatherology meteorologist Jennifer Vachitsky joining us, and also Kristen, along with that roller coaster of weather, we get the roller coaster of emotions. Christina Shelton just simply replies yay and appreciates the shout out. So and I've noticed we see when people, you know, like the live feed of the show or whatnot, or if they love it. I've never had that little heart clicked on so many times as today's appearance. Apparently you are officially, I mean, we put Chief Morale Officer as your show title for a reason. So,
well, I think we, you know, we're bringing a lot of love this morning with Can't Smile Without You. Mm-hmm. And then You Make Me So Very Happy. I'm sensing a theme here.
We are trying because we do have to, you know, give you the good with the bad. And that included, you know, we talked about,
Mutual.
There's so much love being collected in the comment section today, but we talked about Idaho and trying to, you know, crack down on, you know, actually helping young women in need of abortion care. We've talked about in the past, we've talked about, you know, the book bans, it's all out there, and you have to bring an attitude to it that says, okay, these are not good things, but we have to stay upbeat because, as our friend Dan Schaefer noted yesterday in his Twitter feed, the turnout for a presidential election is somewhere in like the 70% range, which isn't bad. You know, still could be better. For these last midterms in Wisconsin, the turnout was something like 60%, which again was amazing for midterms. Mm-hmm. But in these spring Supreme Court elections, even the ones that get a lot of attention, we're still looking at maybe a 30-35% turnout. You know, 2 out of 3 people won't take the time to go vote normally next week. And so we have to bring that information to them to provide a little motivation. And you can't just do it wringing your hands, even though there's certainly days you feel like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I forget because I'm so involved in this that other people do not have the level of understanding that I do about what's happening in my community. And I'm really being reminded about that as I've been calling people and talking with them about the DePere school board race, which you probably have not heard about. But my kids go to school in DePere, and we have a candidate who's running who is supported by some pretty dark money, and she's got some pretty crazy ideas. And she's not answering a lot of questions like, do you support school vouchers? She pivots on that. Clearly, she's not a candidate who belongs in leadership in public schools. Also, she sends her kids to private school. Like, that's a red flag.
Oh, well, okay. I mean, again, it's part of that war on public schools, which is now being so much more openly waged by people who don't have a personal investment in public schools. Their investment is in tearing down what other people have.
Yeah. I mean, really, talk about a red flag. When you send your kids to private school but want to serve on a public school board, that's a big no for me. So I've been personally calling community members and explaining this to them and telling them that Melissa Niffenegger is not the right person for us. And it's amazing how receptive people are and how they want to engage in this conversation and how grateful they are for this information, because it really is kind of hard to find on this level.
It really is at the local level. And in fact, while I don't have it right in front of me here, we did hear from a couple of folks up in the Lac de Flambeau area who generated their own website and reached out to their candidates for town board because there's no place else to get them. We talk about the news deserts, especially in rural parts of Wisconsin. I mean, I'm here in the town of Eagle Point in Chippewa County. We have a town board election coming up. We don't have a news outlet in the town of Eagle Point. And so for me, it's based on some people that I know and respect, and I see which yard signs they put up. Mm-hmm. And I say this as a journalist, I say this as a former elected official, that's not good enough. I should be doing my own research on the candidates. And so, you know, it's exactly like Mary just commented on Facebook, school boards matter. School boards matter a lot.
Oh, they for sure do. And so do city council races and county board and mayoral races. And it can be very confusing because the information that's publicly available, may not be informative. You know, candidates tend to answer things in a pretty vanilla way, but when you dig deeper and you have a true understanding, you really get where they're coming from.
Well, that's where we talked about like the code words and things with the folk, with Nicole from Motherhood for Good and Kate. And we talked about those things like parental rights.
Yes.
So they may speak in vague tones, but you look for those phrases. And when you see parental rights, that is such a buzzword for, you know, any right-wing position, meaning the rights of parents who don't want racial history to be taught, for example.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Or our little city is getting big city problems.
Oh, that's anytime it's about big city. Yep,
yeah. There you go. So Chad Weininger in Green Bay, who is challenging incumbent Eric Genrich, it's all the dog whistles. It's all of those little buzzwords. And those are keys. And we recognize that. But a lot of people don't, or a lot of people are encouraged and egged on by that. And so it's important for us to reveal that and to call it out when we see it.
Well, and that's where, you know, Eric Genrich, his former Democratic legislator, now the mayor of Green Bay, has been running commercials that talk about the accomplishments. Yeah, you mentioned, I think, either the roads and bridges that have been fixed or some of the other things that are getting done there. And, you know, it's that positive vision that is especially helpful. But like you said, there are a lot of code words and phrases and things that want to make the race darker, make Green Bay's vision and future appear darker than it needs to be. And that positive leadership, like what Eric is providing, would seem to me to be the better path.
Mm-hmm. And really, this race comes down to values. When you look at the Green Bay mayoral race in particular, you look at somebody like Eric, who has really led with consistency and vision and persistence. I mean, this is not an exciting job, but he's doing it so incredibly well. He's added 7 police officers to the force. He's been very honest in his leadership. And then in opposition, we've got Chad Weininger, who in his time in the state assembly has consistently voted against workers, voted against women, and he is endorsed and supported by groups that want women not to have any control over their bodies, no access to abortion for any reason. Even the Green Bay mayoral race is about abortion, Pat. And that is so crazy in this day and age. But
it is. It's what we would not have expected. But these local elections, certainly the folks in Wausau, we talked to Chad Holmes yesterday about, you know, the outside money that's coming in, how these right-wing candidates, they used to be individual races. It was vote for so-and-so for school board. Now they run as tickets. They run as slates because of the outside money and influence that helps, you know, helps fund their races and look to turn Wisconsin into another Florida, where there was the outrageous story yesterday about how is it that a movie about Ruby Bridges, the little girl, you know, who helped desegregate schools decades ago, a Disney movie about her, how did that get banned and pulled off school shelves, you know, off out of the library and or out of the classrooms in Florida? And it was one parent who didn't see the movie all the way through, but who filed a complaint saying that this movie about getting rid of segregated schools would teach white people to hate black people or something like that. And that this one complaint was enough for a school to pull that film down. That is not how we make decisions on the values that we instill into our children.
Well, it's a Disney movie too in Florida, and there's kind of an all-out attack on Disney. So,
which is again,
maybe this is a multi-layered thing.
Just amazing that this can happen. But I mean, again, we're talking about, you know, Michelangelo's David, a Renaissance statue being listed as pornographic because one parent is more bothered by a statue with a penis than of the AR-15s that are gunning down our children. It's these misplaced priorities that are making these elections so dark, so expensive, so divisive. And so, yeah, we absolutely are going to take some time to talk about these local races. We're going to try to bring a ray of sunshine to them while we can in and around the discussions. But the issues are extremely serious. And that's where, again, folks got to know that 2 out of 3 voters may not show up on Tuesday. So it's so incumbent upon you to do that. And you can get that information at myvote.wi.gov. Find out where your polling place is. Find out if you're registered. Get registered. Go vote. And like you were doing, Kristen, tell friends about the election. That one simple contact from somebody, a text message or whatever, reminding them can make a huge difference.
It sure can. And just to bring it back around to the DePere School Board, there are four people running for two seats, and three of the candidates are brilliant. I'm sad that we can only elect two, because three of them would be wonderful. So we've got really good choices. We just need to make sure that as a community, we're having these conversations and we're choosing the right people who provide that vision for the future.
When we come back, the Democratic State Assembly Rep Jody Emerson of Eau Claire is standing by, and we will talk about current issues, but we will also get into what happens after the election, and that is the legislature getting back to writing a budget and dealing with a record high surplus that Republicans continue to squander. We'll be back. You're up north.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Oh, how I hate to get up in the morning. Oh, how I'd love to remain in bed.
This is Irving
For
Berlin.
For the hardest blow of all is to hear the bugler call. You gotta get up, you gotta get up, you gotta get up this morning. Someday I'm going to murder the bugler.
Someday they're going to find him dead, and on and on and on and on it goes. Bumper music chosen especially for our next guest, our morning ray of sunshine, Eau Claire State Representative Jody Emerson joins us. Jody, good morning.
Good morning, Pat and Kristen. I am doubled over with laughter at you picking that song specifically for me. Thank you so much.
It says it all. It's an old World War II film called This Is the Army. And we have had this long running joke. And the only reason I bring it up now is that we heard from one of the Capitol staffers who sent a note yesterday saying, you know, how about talking to Representative Emerson tomorrow at 7:30? But what it said was, Representative Emerson would love to be on tomorrow at 7:30 if that works. And I wrote back to her, I hope you know how hard I laughed at reading about how she would love to be on at 7:30 in the morning. She most certainly does not love the idea at all, but I feed off of her not a morning person energy. And it's there, truer words were never spoken, Jody. You are the happiest, most positive non-morning person I've ever met.
Oh, thanks, Pat. That's a compliment I'll take with my cup of coffee here. So.
And then another cup of coffee. And another cup after that, until the gal is awake. She's up and she's at it. Hardest working woman in Eau Claire politics.
But so, if you want a midnight person on your radio show, I'm your gal.
So. I know this because when I'd come down to Madison once or twice and met you and Julian over at the Old Avenue Bar. And, you know, you kids were ready for dinner at like 9 p.m. and I'm dragging. I'm like, I got to go to bed. You are truly the night owls of Madison and Eau Claire. And yes. I appreciate that. So let's get to some of what you're working on today. When talking to Kristen here earlier, we talked about Dan Kaufman's new article in The New Yorker, Dan Kaufman, who wrote The Fall of Wisconsin. And in setting up the state Supreme Court race, in his story, he talks about all the things that Republicans have done since taking power a dozen years ago in the legislature. And he explains how Sheboygan has been cut in half in order to crack the city. And now the city has two different Republican legislators. So that's cracking. You, Jody, are part of the other gerrymandering strategy called packing, where you pack all the Democratic voters into a single district in Eau Claire, which is, you know, a relatively safe seat for a Democrat, but it means all kinds of folks in the greater Chippewa Valley have representation that isn't exactly in line with their values. And, you know, that whole issue of fair maps is extremely important in next week's election.
It absolutely is. And this is definitely an election that nobody should sit out. There is so much on the line, whether it is reproductive health care rights, whether it is having fair maps, whether it is, you know, I even saw an article about Act 10 and, you know, it's just there has been conservative control of this, the court for way too long in a state that is a flip state. So it's time that we get there, we get out to the polls, we do our job, we bring a friend with us, we have them bring five friends with them, and, you know, let's just get this done.
Well, we have to, because again, that is, it's basically the, you know, the last line of defense is having that state Supreme Court stand for Wisconsin values in the law again, not what, you know, the right wing wants it to be. It's a battle that Governor Tony Evers has been waging for the past 4+ years here. And again, while you and other Democrats in the legislature can provide all kinds of moral and vocal support, it's a lot tougher to do in the minority that you have. But what you can do is amplify the Democratic ideas that are out there, the ones that would get put into law in line with Wisconsin values if you had fairer maps. And that's where we take this to the state budget. We're going to be talking all about that after the election. The Joint Finance Committee is going to be going on a road trip around the state. But you and other legislative Democrats are wanting to make sure that everybody around the state has input into what can be in this state budget. What is it that you tell folks about the way that they can get in their two cents?
Yeah, so we're fortunate in Eau Claire that the Joint Finance Committee is going to be bringing the committee right to our front door on April 11th. And there's other locations throughout the state too. But it's very infrequently that people actually come to you and say, tell me about what you want in this budget. And, you know, I'm just talking to all of my constituents, our stakeholder groups in the area, and saying, you need to get there and say, this is what's important. We have a record surplus right now. We have critical needs that are for our state. We've come through the crisis of the pandemic fairly well, but it showed the cracks in our system, whether that is our public health, whether that is our housing insecurity people, or whether it's the fact that we've got a broken childcare system in this country. In Wisconsin, we have 56 slots for every 100 kids who need childcare. And if you want to talk about getting people to their jobs, you have to be able to take care of the people who are depending on you in order to show up at your job and do your stuff. And that's one of the things we did use some pandemic money for, childcare counts, which gives money to the childcare centers to either recruit new workers, keep their doors open, keep the costs lower for the families, and help people to be able to have those slots for kids. I mean, I can't imagine having a 3-year-old at home right now and saying, okay, well, what do we do with you? Why don't you watch TV while mom and dad go to work? You know, I mean, if you can't take care of the people who you are supposed to take care of, you can't go to your job.
Kristen, it is not an unfamiliar topic to you with your patients and what would happen if we better supported childcare, made it more accessible and affordable.
My patients, myself, I have 4 kids. I mean, when they were little, struggling to find childcare in a difficult environment with variable schedules, it was always a nightmare. I still, now that they're old, I look back and I'm like, damn, I can't believe we made it through. Everybody who has kids deals with this on one level or another, because we don't have those family units and those communities where people are coming together to help each other out the way that we used to back in the olden days. So this couldn't be more critical for young families, Jody. Thank you for doing this incredibly important work.
Yeah, it's, you know, and it's something where, like with most of our caregiver situations, we can't just raise the cost of the product like we can at Target or the gas pump or wherever, because these families' budgets are only going to go so far. But yet we need to raise the wages of the people who are working in these centers. We can't ask our early childhood educators to live on poverty wages. Mm-hmm. So when they can get an education and then go work at Culver's or Quick Trip for more money. This is where the government can step in and help with giving some grants to help make it so that these parents can make ends meet, so that these childcare centers can have workers who have a livable wage. I mean, most childcare workers, they're about $10 an hour. Nobody can live on that. Not in the state of Wisconsin. So this is something that we can do with part of our $7 billion surplus so that we can make it easier on families to get to work. I mean, there's some counties just doing like a rough search. Oconto County, in your general neck of the woods, Kristen, they have 17 childcare slots for every 100 kids who need it.
Wow.
That's amazing. And in the governor's budget proposal, that includes $22 million to keep supporting partnerships between businesses and childcare providers who want to do their part to make sure childcare is more affordable and accessible for their workers. So this is just for a partnership effort for those businesses who actually want the best workers, care about their workers, and are willing to be part of this partnership to make sure that childcare is affordable, $22 million. Now, if I'm not mistaken, Representative Jody Emerson, that is among all of the many proposals from Governor Evers that the Republican legislators have said, we're not even going to start with that. We're going to throw the governor's entire proposal in the wastebasket, and we will, you know, work off some kind of a base budget. But correct me if I'm wrong, I don't believe there is currently a Republican proposal on making childcare more affordable and available.
You know, I'm not sassy enough yet this morning to say what I think that the Republicans' proposal is.
We can guess. We got a good guess.
Care of, you know, young children. But since they want to make America great again, and America was apparently great in the 50s for especially women and people of color and things like that.
Right.
I'm guessing that they just want to leave some of us at home taking care of the kids and cooking their dinner and, you know, opening their door with this, their slippers and their daily martini. So,
and by the way, packing the lunches every day, which again, many parents can't do, don't have the time, can't afford or whatnot. And so the governor's budget takes school lunches and breakfasts and takes the cost of that off the table and says, look, kids got to go to school. Let's feed the kids while we're there. And I'll say again, not that you have the answer to this, Jody, but how is this still a thing? How are we still debating whether school lunches and breakfasts should be taken care of for kids?
I mean, that's just the thing. And that's where I really struggle with some of my pro-life colleagues when they say that they want to, you know, do what's best for kids. But I don't know, basic thoughts of feeding children is usually a good place to start when we want to do what's best for kids. And we're not even going to get into the whole gun safety debate or anything like that today, because that's a whole nother segment and can of worms to open. But
right.
This is, again, going back to our original topic, why we need to show up when the Joint Finance Committee is coming to your area, whether it is Minocqua or Waukesha or Eau Claire or the Wisconsin Dells area, and say, this is what I want you to do with my state budget, my record surplus. This is the program that makes a difference in my life. And you need to put your money where your mouth is. So,
exactly. And so let's see what I've got here for the dates is you mentioned Eau Claire, but it's actually starting the day after the election, next Wednesday in Waukesha at the Waukesha County Expo Center. Then on Tuesday, the 11th at UW Eau Claire at the Davies Center up on the third floor. The following day, Wednesday, April 12th, will be at the Wisconsin Dells Wilderness Resort. Then Wednesday, April 26th in Minocqua at Lakeland Union High School. Now, there are also ways that you can comment on the budget through an online portal or through an email, and we'll make those more available as we get closer to those public hearing dates, Jody. But let me ask you, when people make comments through email or through a portal or whatnot, apart from the sense of satisfaction, is there value in making public comments?
There, I think there's always value in people talking up in our representative democracy. You know, you're sending an email to somebody who works for you. I know in my office, we pay attention to it. We log every constituent contact that comes in. I'm hoping that all of my colleagues take the same, give it the same gravity that it deserves. But if you are able to, and I know not every person is able to, if you are able to make it to one of these public listening sessions, do it.
Yes.
Even if you're not going to be the person who's going to talk, maybe you're coming with a group of five friends and you're all talking about the same topic, wear the same t-shirt, wear the same color of shirts and stand with that person as they are speaking.
So that's a great idea.
It says we represent what is coming out of this person's mouth.
That's perfect. Jody Emerson, state rep from Eau Claire, will talk more about this process as it unfurls, maybe at a more decent hour some other time, but not today. And we appreciate it so much, Jody. Thank you.
Thanks, you guys. It's good to see you both.
All right. Todd Alba's coming up next. You're up north.
Welcome back.
Oh, yeah. We got the gang all together again here on a Wednesday morning. It's Up North News Radio, which will, in a few minutes, give way to the Todd Alba Show. And as fate would have it, we found a guy named Todd Alba to host it.
Imagine so that.
We got that going for us, which is nice. How are you?
I am well, Pat. How are you?
I'm fine. But again, in a few minutes here, Chief Morale Officer Dr. Lyerly will part ways. And at some point, we have to figure out how we get through this day without, you know, that energy that seems to come from, God, wherever the hell it comes from, Kristen. I don't know.
My uterus. I'm pretty sure it's
wow.
Straight from my uterus.
I was not expecting that response.
That's
but
fantastic.
Sure,
shout out to the ladies this morning.
A all wellspring right. of life.
There we go. So, Todd, you've been doing this show, you know, without my help for the past couple of weeks. You haven't needed
we,
my.
We got by. It was hard. It was difficult.
You haven't needed my free input. You haven't needed my casual advice. You haven't needed my gentle but well-intentioned criticism. So let's just pick up where I left off.
Okay.
What's with the conspiracy thing here? I see this tweet that says, the UW system wants the issue of President Rothman's secret plans to close down UW-Richland to go away, but the Richland community is just beginning. Hashtag, where is Jay's next target? Hashtag, what is Jay hiding? Hashtag, we need transparency.
We do.
Look at you.
I know. Look at, see, we got.
You're man on a mission.
There you go. Save our Richland campus right yep. there.
Todd is showing a sign that says, we've got, save our Richland campus.
Yep. So there you go. I was up at Richland Center over the weekend, and there was a great meeting on Monday night of citizens, the county board chair, vice chair, Sean Murphy Lopez, and also the education chair of the county board, Linda Gentis, put on a great community forum and laid out the plan that system asked UW Richland to put forward, which is ironic because, of course, it's system and the campus's job, meaning the educational side, the academic side, to recruit and to support the academic program. The county folks are just supposed to take care of the buildings and whatnot. So, but the Richland people did it, and they put together a great program. Sadly, the UW system has yet to put forward a plan. So that's disappointing. And number two, I wrote down one of the questions. One of the people there last night, or on Monday night, said, quote, where did Rothman get his information, meeting president of the UW system, Rothman, information to make his decision to close this campus? As long as he's president, I think we're singing into the wind, unquote, which I thought was fantastic.
But was this not set in motion before he came on board?
We don't know. That would be a great, okay. that's a perfect question to ask, but nobody will talk to us, Pat.
I've been away for a couple of weeks, but has President Rothman made an appearance yet and sat down with folks in Richland Center?
He has not.
Okay. So I didn't miss anything
you
there.
You did not miss anything. No. He does not come to Richland. He does not sit down with anybody. The chancellor, the interim chancellor at Platteville, Tammy Ivedovich, she refuses to either come on this show after she said she would. She refuses to talk to the press. She refuses to go to the Richland Center community and talk to the public. It's just, and I think that's what's most frustrating, Pat, is as a former legislator, I can't imagine you. I mean, refusing to meet with your constituents, refusing to meet with people, refusing to answer questions. And that's all people really want is, hey, what actually led to this? What were the mistakes? Whether it was prior to Rothman or whether it was during Rothman, but nobody wants to answer that. They just want to say, well, here we are, we have to move forward.
You talk about meeting people and hearing unpopular ideas. And frankly, that's just something that should come with the territory. And you and I, again, in reminiscing about a different time and place, you know, I held more than 100 listening sessions and took all manner of criticism. And I watched as Russ Feingold, as a U.S. senator, would hold, you know, public hearings in all 72 counties throughout the course of a year or a term. I forget which now. And I'd been to many of them, and people were just rude and merciless, but he took it. He took the criticism because it also meant sometimes he was learning information. And Kristen, as somebody who's campaigned, you know that if you're knocking on doors, you know, and somebody says something bad, you don't just walk away. You have that engagement.
It hurts your feelings and it feels bad. But sometimes we have to have that information. Sometimes we have to hear it. We have to engage in these difficult conversations. That's where we come to that place of resolution and working together and solving problems.
So that's where we sit right now, Todd, is you know, you guys doing your share to try to find a resolution to this that does not involve closing down the center?
Well, again, it goes back to wanting answers, wanting transparency from system, wanting a plan. I mean, you can't really negotiate or mediate anything if only one side's talking. So you want to have a plan that you can both look at and agree on from system. And then, yeah, asking, you know, is there a way that there is still an alternative? Maybe it's not through Platteville. Maybe there are other ways that part of the campus plan that the locals put forward is maybe we focus on nursing. Maybe we focus on teaching, you know, those things that we really need in Southwest Wisconsin. This is an economic development question, you guys. I mean, look at how much the legislature put in under the Republican regime in Foxconn and in other places in this state, and, you know, all in the name of job creation. This is a job creation. This is an economic development as well as education issue in Southwest Wisconsin. So, you know, we're asking for questions to be answered from system, a plan to be put forward from system, but also our state legislators. You know, where is the funding for this going to come from? Where is the economic development, the rural economic development going to come from? And what's interesting, here's the other thing, Pat and Dr. Came out of this. The local mayor, Todd Copperdall, who I now have to say is a member of Civic Media, Todd Copperdall, the mayor, met with the governor, Governor Tony Evers, who was in town, brought this up, and all the governor wanted to talk about apparently was shared revenue. Met with State Senator Howard Markline, who represents the area, who is the co-chair of Joint Finance, brought it up. All he wants to talk about is shared revenue. So I find it, I mean, Pat, agree or disagree, when Republicans and Democrats are agreeing not to talk about something, that means there's usually something there. Because nobody seems to want to answer questions and actually get down to the nitty-gritty on this. And that's why I think every campus in the state has to be on a yellow alert, because this could be coming to your neck of the woods.
So that was my next question, is when you put the hashtag, where is Jay's next target?
Yeah.
It is essentially you're looking for statewide attention to be paid to this, because it, in your mind, if it can happen here, it's going to happen to another UW Center campus somewhere else in the state, you believe?
Four-time Richland Center Mayor Darla Wentz and the former longtime chair of the local campus foundation has been talking with his counterparts, other foundations across the state. There are other campuses who are very worried, whether it's Baraboo, whether it's UW-Barron, whether it's Superior, whether it's Parkside. There are places all over the state who have seen slightly decreasing enrollments or larger decreasing enrollments. And who's to say this can't happen to you? Because again, President Rothman never told anybody why he was doing this, never came to the community to find out for himself what was going on before he made this decision. So who's to say this can't visit your neck of the woods? And I actually believe, I don't say this lightly, I'm not a big conspiracy theorist guy, but I think there's a cabal between Republicans and Democrats to cut things, that cut education in this state.
And we mentioned in the first hour, 82 more school referendums are on the ballot next week. Todd, we'll talk to you over on your show starting at 8 o'clock on some of these fine civic media stations. And Kristen, I'll talk to you tomorrow. We'll have Hometown Health, and we'll try to have some more fun as well.
It's going to be another wonderful day, Pat.
It sure is. Thank you all for joining us. Have a great Wednesday. We'll see you tomorrow.